Next, David defines patriotism and its importance in our country today. He also looks at why traditional patriotism is falling away and how it's been replaced with a kind of false patriotism. We still need to hold on to the traditional values our country was based upon.
To honor and revere one's country and one's fellow countrymen and its historic evolution, how it came to be, the Constitution of the United States, the Bill of Rights, the difficulties it went through and its interpretations by the highest courts. So you have a respect for the integrity. As I said, be there a man with soul so dead, who never has said to himself, this is my own, my native land. All right, that's calibration 500, the meaning the heart. When I think of band of brothers, you see, when I was in the service, that was the motif. You would cover each other's back, you'd die for each other, because it's aligned with valor. Valor calibrates extremely high. It was because of valor. So you stood for the principles of valor and integrity and courage and the qualities that your country stood for. Well, what did everybody die for in this country? They died for equality and all the virtues of a democracy that we have. People died for those. They've died for them. And that's why I don't like insolence about America or trying to make it wrong. It also depends on what level of society you're talking about. In the world which I grew up, I never heard of prejudice. I never heard prejudice, never ran into it. Never heard a prejudice remark. Never. Oh, yeah, it's patriotism. Yeah, patriotism about what? It's like dedication. Dedication to what? Dedication to robbing banks. So in and of is a quality. It depends on what you put your faith in and your dedication to. But I think what's generally meant by the term is pretty much represented by the band of brothers, or it means standing for integrity, commitment, honor. In the generation I grew up, as far as sexism goes, you know, women were honored. Women were honored. They weren't allowed at the bar because the bar was full of vulgarity and crass sexism. Women were respected. So when a woman entered the room, you stood up. You stood up when a woman entered the room to honor her femininity, because she is the mother out of which is born all of humankind. And therefore, the woman was revered, and especially the mother figure in the house. So nobody used vulgar language in front of a woman. That was respect. So most of the things that are interpreted as sexism, you know, were considerably distortions of reality. And the reason women didn't have many kinds of jobs is because the bread earner was the man. I mean, I never met any women plumbers. I finally did meet one. But it went down from father to son in the unions. And it wasn't expected that the woman was going to go out and get a job and support the family. So she was the homemaker and honored. And God help you if you were disrespectful to your mother or your grandmother. So women were honored and revered because of their critical role in the propagation of mankind and the bringing up of the children. And the earning of money, etc., career, that was up to the man. So it wasn't there was a glass ceiling and that women were suppressed or repressed or thought of in a negative way. On the contrary, they were thought of in a very positive way. You wouldn't want a woman out there getting herself all covered with filth and dirt and grease in a basement doing plumbing. You know what I'm saying? That was for men, not for women. So a lot of it's been turned around for political reasons into a negative interpretation that takes it out of the context. And the simplest way to distort truth is to take it out of context. You want the best person for the job, and the sex of the race is irrelevant. As I say, if I have a brain surgeon, I don't care what sex or color the brain surgeon is, I want the best brain surgeon because you only got one brain to lose, you see. So you're basing it on his excellence, excellence.
The human dilemma. All right, so one's alignment with truth. One's alignment with truth means that at every intersection, you choose that which is true. And if you constantly choose that which is true, you will end up in a completely different dimension than people who constantly choose what is false, because they end up actually in an alternate reality. It is really not the same reality, which helps you with judgmentalism, because you realize the way you experience the world is not the way that person is experiencing it. What seems to you blatant and obvious truth to them is falsehood. what seems logical and sensible doesn't even cross their mind. The Lord said to be forgiving towards all, and to be forgiving depends on how you see the person. So when you see the person differently, then you realize they live in a different sense of reality, a different world than you do. And you can't judge them by your standards because they can't even comprehend your standards. They cannot comprehend your standards. So we consider mercy, especially being merciful towards the weak and innocent, as a virtue. There's a whole other culture which threatens our own existence, actually, which sees it exactly the opposite. Contemptible weakness. And therefore, you're deserving of death. So your alignment, then, has a very powerful effect on how you experience the world, what you interpret as truth or valuable. All your value judgments are coming out of your alignment. And out of that alignment, we're seeking God versus materialism. The spiritual versus the material. God versus the worship of money and wealth and worldly power. Worldly power. I don't know what people want worldly power for. It seems to me like a terrible nuisance. But a lot of people will do anything to get it. And I think it would be a terrible drag. Today's liberator is tomorrow's dictator. As written in italics in my new book, today's liberator is tomorrow's dictator. You know any cases where that's not true? The whole world. Today's liberator is tomorrow's dictator. The desire for control is so endemic. Power over others, dominance, hegemony, the whole alpha male syndrome. So the desire for control is in people who put down wanting to control. Desire for control, power over others. People seem to get a great deal out of that. I've always considered it, frankly, a nuisance to control other people, because then they become your responsibility and you got all kinds of karmic liability. I just tune everybody drive their own golf cart, you know. I don't want to push them off the green and get one up on them. Desire for control. But you see how this is like an obsession with many people. And of course in marital relationships, who's going to be the one that controls? Do we see this movie or that movie? People get a sense of power out of that. So it's sort of a narcissistic self-indulgence to always want to control people and situations. But sometimes it's an ethical conflict. Should one try to take control and in your view of it make it better, or just turn it over to God? You'll find, pragmatically speaking, turning it over to God, it works well.